Hey, a brand new hour of Talkback. Hour number two is underway on this Thursday, May 28th. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christensen is taking your phone calls this morning. And we are always honored to have with us Dr. John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center. I can't think of anyone in my memory in all the years I've been doing this that of someone that has a greater grasp of knowledge on his topic, especially with firearms and crime and what's going on, especially in this country. So, Dr. Lott, good morning and welcome back, sir.
Oh, it's great to talk to you guys again. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. It's our pleasure. And I'd like to just step aside here for just a moment and allow you to talk about the things that are on top of your top of mind awareness, the projects and articles you've been working on.
I just put together an op-ed on the move by a number of states to go and ban people having Glock handguns, which is by far the most common handgun that's used by police in the United States. Probably about 65-70% of police in the United States use Glocks. And it's probably been the best-selling model of handguns in the United States for the civilian market also. There's been some people who put together what they call a Glock switch, which allows them to go and supposedly convert this gun from a regular semi-automatic into a fully automatic gun.
Wow.
And but I would pretty much advise most people not to do it. And the reason is because it doesn't really actually change the firing mechanism in the gun. What it does is it keeps the chamber from kind of closing completely when it's supposed to close and force feeds bullets in there. Once you pull the trigger, it will continue firing until the bullets run out. So it's not like a normal machine gun where the bullets will come out as long as you have the trigger depressed. And the problem is that if the chamber isn't fully closed, when you have an explosion from the bullet, the explosion just doesn't go down the barrel as it was supposed to, but it can go down into the magazine.
Wow.
And basically can cause the handgun to explode on you. You can have pieces of shrapnel from that, you know, hit the person, cut open your hand. There have been people who have lost eyes as a result of kind of that misfire that's there. And, you know, it's not something I would recommend somebody do unless they have some type of death wish to go and use that. And, but anyway, you have California and Maryland have just passed laws banning Glocks. You have New York and Illinois and a couple other states which are considering legislation or passing, in the process of passing this legislation. New Jersey just is involved in a court case where they're requiring that all licensed dealers in the state who have sold Glocks over the last decade have to go and give a list of all their people who purchased any gun, not just Glocks, to the attorney general there of the state that they will then use to go and track down who owns a Glock in the state so it can be confiscated.
Dr. Lott, I need to tell you, we're just a few seconds away from a hard break, so I had to jump in here.
Sorry.
We're going to come right back. Dr. Lott's joining us. We'll be back after this quick timeout, and we already have callers waiting to visit with you, including Joe, standing by. Thanks for joining us on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Back after this. Back on Talkback now, and our special guest joining us on the phone, Dr. John Lott, founder and director of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And we had to cut you off there from your intro, Dr. Lott, so please continue, if you wouldn't mind, sharing the important information that you're working on.
Sure. Well, I mean, I just think that we're talking about this move to ban Glocks in a number of Democratic-controlled states. They know they can't go and ban all handguns. And I think this is just their way of at least trying to take a big chunk out of it and say, look, we're not trying to ban all handguns. We're just banning one model of it. And I think my own guess is that the courts will strike this down. I mean, in New Jersey, when they're getting the licensed dealers all the sales that they've made, there are people who are buying guns that they're going to have on the list from the licensed dealers are law-abiding citizens that are there. They're not anybody that they need to worry about. And, you know, so I think the courts will eventually strike it down because the courts have said as long as a gun is in common use, it's legal. And but it's you're going to have a number of Democratic-controlled states which are going to pass bans in the interim before the courts get involved.
All right. We do have folks waiting on the line to visit with you. This is Joe.
Yep, you got Joe.
Joe, good morning. Joe, you're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead, please.
Thank you both. Yeah, I'm interested in the assassination culture that we're experiencing. And now it seems they're demonizing the billionaires. And I'm wondering if it's going to be okay to not only kill people you disagree with, but now you can kill people if they're rich. And if you have any specific information about the Mangione case and the Utah case, because it's hard to get information on both of those cases. They're just not covering it.
All right. Thank you for the call, sir. So please go ahead, Dr. Lott.
Right. Well, I mean, we just had another attack on the White House just a week ago.
Right.
This is, I don't know, maybe the fifth attempt that we know of that deals with Trump in some way, you know, and the previous record, to the extent that one doesn't want to keep track of these records, there were two attempts on Gerald Ford. All the other presidents at most suffered just one attempt. So we're going for the record books, and the Trump's administration obviously isn't over yet. So, you know, you have a lot of people. Nassan, this young kind of influencer out there, has made a name for himself. He's the guy, he's going around campaigning with everybody from Plattner in Maine to tell Rico or whatever his name is in Texas, the Democratic Senate nominee there, to the candidate in Michigan, the Democratic Senate candidate in Michigan. He recently kind of got attention because he was saying that, you know, he was praising going and trying to kill Mangione, saying that Mangione, the person that he killed, the health insurance executive, was engaging in social murder by not approving all the care and everything that everybody wanted to go and get. You know, the irony is for these individuals that are pushing, you know, trying to kill a health insurance executive, try going and getting medical care in Canada or the UK or someplace like that, where the waits are just extremely long. I mean, the notion that, you know, in the United States, people go in, you go and you get your MRI maybe the same day or within a couple of days. I had my daughter-in-law living in the UK. They basically told her it would be 9 months before she could go and get an MRI. She was in such pain that she ended up leaving the country so that she could go and get an MRI and take it back to the doctors there so she could go and get into the queue for the next level of treatment that's there. But, you know, that's kind of beside the point, I guess. But, you know, you're right. You look at a lot of these Democrats who are running for office, they're say that billionaires only get their money by stealing. You know, you just had Platner attacking Jeff Bezos. And, you know, Bezos, who put together Amazon, hasn't forced anybody to buy from Amazon. The reason why somebody buys from Amazon is because the price is better there, or they can get fast delivery. And they can go and compare lots of products and read the reviews and decide what product is best for themselves. It's because he makes the process of buying more attractive to them than the alternatives that are there. They could still go and do the alternatives, but they've chosen voluntarily to go and buy from him. That's how he's made his money. And you know, they think that anybody has been successful, it can only be through theft. And, you know, it's not too surprising that if people actually believe those types of things, or believe the types of claims that Trump is a Nazi or a fascist or whatever. I'm not sure what worse things you can call somebody, but if somebody really believes that there's the end of democracy coming, you can understand why at least a few nuts out there, because, you know, obviously people have to take responsibility for their own actions, no matter what the rhetoric is out there. But it's a different world. I mean, you look at surveys asking people whether they think political violence is acceptable, and there's a huge divide. I just was seeing a survey, I believe it was from YouGov, recently.
I'll tell you what. Dr. Lott, let's hang on to that survey till we come back from the break. I want to give you plenty of time to stretch out and talk about that. We're going to come right back. We also have calls from Francis from Big Fork and Rick, both standing by to talk with Dr. John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center, president and founder. We're going to come right back after this timeout here on Talkback on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Hey, we're back. This is the Thursday edition of Talkback. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christensen is producing Talkback, taking your phone calls. Dr. John Lott is our featured guest this morning, president and founder of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And Francis from Big Fork has been waiting quite a while to visit with you. Francis, go ahead, please.
Okay. I was thinking, you know, like Chicago and all those states, they want to take everybody's guns away. Well, right now, the Democrats have turned more to the Communist Party. If you look at, you know, with the Nazis and stuff, that's how they took over. They got rid of the guns from the people. They didn't want the police to arrest anybody. And then pretty soon it's chaos and everything like it is now. And then they can control us. That's why they want to build a lot of apartment houses, because they don't want people to live out in the country, because it's harder to control people. And they don't like Christians, because Christians think where the other people, like the college students, they're kind of pretty much brainwashed anymore. I hate to say that, but I love my college students. But, you know, they aren't being taught to respect our country or the Pledge of Allegiance, and they are so scared of any other opinion. You know, we got to keep working really hard to get this country back to where it was.
Thank you so much for the call. Dr. Lott, please go ahead.
You're welcome.
She brings up a lot of points. As somebody who spent most of my adult life in academia, I've had positions at Stanford, University of Chicago, the Wharton Business School, UCLA, Rice, Yale. You know, I have to generally agree with the comment that she's made. You know, I think it was about 20 years ago now, there was a survey of law professors in the top 100 law schools. And 93% were registered as Democrats, 4% were registered as Republicans. And you try to explain to people that kind of even understates the imbalance, because you have to get a supermajority vote to get tenure. And you can be such a nutty left winger and that you alienate a third of the Democrat faculty and you'll still get tenure. But if you're a Republican, you have to get two thirds of the Democrats to vote for you. And the only types of people who could do that would be ones who really maybe are very liberal Republicans. And even then, you have to be in an area that they don't care about, like teaching tax or something like that, where they have a hard time getting people. But the big thing is the students have little idea of how biased their professors are. You know, they don't know what questions can be asked. They don't know what the alternative arguments are. You know, you're lucky to get students to go and read the material that's assigned, let alone assuming that they're going to go out and do research on their own outside of what's assigned in class. And so you have professors who maybe make the strongest argument on the side that they agree with and then provide basically a straw man argument for the other side. And the students don't know that, and it has a big impact on students' perceptions. Plus, when you're at the top university, so I was on admissions at Wharton for a while, and I did graduate admissions, but I still had interactions with the undergraduate admissions people. And I was stunned to find out that they wouldn't go and admit an Eagle Scout who had like 1,600 on the SATs. It was like state tennis champion. And I went up after the meeting when I had heard that they weren't going to admit it. I said, what's the deal with this? You know, you always are talking about wanting to have people who are perseverance and, you know, accomplish things. Here's the guy's state tennis champion. You know, he's only 1% of scouts get to be Eagle Scouts.
Right.
And the response was, well, John, you have to understand we're a liberal arts university and it's important that people be open-minded. And we've just learned over time that Eagle Scouts tend to be closed-minded, so we don't allow them in. And you know, I just kind of viewed it as it's their proxy for political views. And there were a number of other proxies for political views that determined whether or not somebody would be admitted or not. And so what you have at the Ivy League schools is not only all the professors are of the left, but the vast majority of students come in as left. You look at surveys of Ivy League schools and 75-80% of the incoming freshmen classify themselves as liberals. Only about 6-8% classify themselves as conservatives. And I think what happens is, and I think part of what goes on is that not only because all your professors, but all your friends are going to be liberals.
Right.
They think that they can cause the few conservatives to be more conservative.
We're coming up against another break, and when we come back, Rick is waiting on the line to visit with you, sir. Dr. John Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, is joining us on the phone, and he'll be with us till 10 o'clock this morning. And several other phone lines are open, by the way, at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And we're looking forward to getting more of your calls for Dr. Lott, who'll be with us right up until the top of the hour. And again, the phone number, 406-721-1290. 90 or 1-800-568-5309. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday, May 28th. A talk back on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Back after this. This hour is flying by here on Talk Back on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Peter Christian here. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls. We're honored to have Dr. John Lott joining us on the phone. Crime Prevention Research Center, crimeresearch.org. And folks have been waiting very patiently on the phone to talk with you. Rick, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, Dr. Lott, there's a bill sitting in the Oregon State House right now that is just passed a vote to move up. Banning all hunting, fishing, agricultural slaughtering of any animals. So it would be including farming, ranching. Do you think that bill? First of all, do you know anything about the bill? And do you know if a bill like that, if it eventually got to the governor's office and voted in, it would pass federal constitutional muster, especially when it comes to weapon ownership? Most people in Montana own weapons to go hunting, and probably most in most parts of Oregon. What do you know about this bill, and what's its chance?
Right. Well, I don't know about the bill, but I do have friends in Oregon, and I have friends who live in rural Oregon who have been attacked by mountain lions and bears and other things that are there. And the thing is, I'm sure people are well-meaning, you know, they want to protect the animals, but what they don't understand is that the importance of hunting in kind of keeping populations level. Otherwise, what you find is these boom and bust cycles that you have for animals where, you know, the deer or the population explodes, it goes up, they eat the food, and then the population crashes. And so the notion of hunting is, you know, you have to get a permit. There's a certain amount that can be culled from the population each year. And they do that in order to keep the populations from going through those boom and bust cycles. So, you know, they may think it's cruel for somebody to shoot an animal, but is it cruel to have the animal starve to death?
They're going after farmers and ranchers in the butchering process of their livestock. They did say that that's going to be illegal too. That's insane. If you've ever been to of Oregon,
I'm just looking at this headline that it said Oregon Initiative P28 would criminalize hunting, fishing, trapping, and farming. Initiative, you could figure that out. It's called the Peace Act, would remove legal exemptions protecting hunting, fishing, trapping, and farming from Oregon's animal abuse statutes, turning nearly a million Oregonians into criminals, so the statement says.
Right. Well, I guess they want to move out the people from the red parts of the state to have them moved someplace else. Ranching, I guess I could see some vegans being concerned about that, but farming is, I don't understand where that would be coming from. And I guess you're cruel to the wheat or something, but, I don't know what goes through people's minds on these things. One question I always would ask people, I said, do you think there'd be more or fewer chickens if people stopped eating chickens, or more or fewer cows? I think most people, when they think about it, they realize that nobody would be raising the chickens if people weren't allowed to, you know, use their eggs or eat the chickens. So is it better to have the animal being alive for some period of time than never have existed? The same thing is true with cows. So,
According to the petition here, it says when it comes to farming and ranching, and I'm reading it right off the bill here, raising animals for food, dairy, eggs, and they would be constituting animal abuse if they did that.
Right. Well, maybe people should just stop eating altogether. That would be one way. But, you know, the thing is, we need to stop the mountain lions from eating, too. I mean, they're cruel, eating other animals there, right? So, I don't know. But as far as the constitutionality of that goes, states have regulated hunting for, like, ever.
You bet.
As long as they don't ban the guns per se, if they just ban what you can use it for, outside of self-defense,
We're going to come right back with more with Dr. Lott right after this quick timeout. Stay with us. 406-721-1290 is our number. We're coming right back on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Welcome back to Talk Back. Again, our special guest on the phone, Dr. John Lott, Crime Prevention Research Center. Folks, lined up to talk with you, sir, and Dave is standing by. Dave, good morning. You're on with Dr. Lott. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning. You know, I consider myself a liberal conservative. But as far as education goes, it sounds like you want, I mean, what does it matter what you, if you're a liberal or a conservative when it comes to education? Isn't it about education? And you, as far as I can tell, you think there's too many liberals and they shouldn't be getting educated and you want to solve that problem. I don't understand.
No,
I mean,
that's not education. True at all. What I want, Dave, is to have balance, at least some balance in academia. The point is that they purposely go out of their way to make sure it's not balanced. I'd be happy if they just didn't go and try to put a thumb on the scale. Look, if you think somebody who's an Eagle Scout shouldn't be admitted into, you know, an Ivy League school, you know, that's your choice. But I don't think that should be relevant. Look, when you're on admissions at those types of universities, what they care about is somebody who distinguished themselves. Can they do well on standardized tests? Can they go and show perseverance and drive? Because those are things that are going to be related to whether they're going to be successful later in life. That's what you should limit yourself to, not look at trying to get proxies for the political views of students that are there. I'll give you one story. When I was at Yale Law School, there was a woman there, a professor named Judy Resnick. I don't know if you know her. She's a very famous feminist legal scholar. And she was always frowning, But she came into the lunchroom one day and she was all smiles. And people noticed and they said, what's going on? What's happened? And she said, well, she'd just done her good deed for the month. She'd gotten two students admitted into the law school who probably couldn't get into a top 10 law school and probably couldn't even get into a top 15 law school. So you have to understand Yale thinks that they're the top law school in the country. And so there was a little bit of concern around the table. And so people asked, well, what happened? Well, the faculty there at Yale goes down and they read through the packets. And she had found two women who had started lesbian activist clubs on their campuses. And she said, you know, this showed drive and perseverance and had gotten the two women admitted to law school, even though their LSAT scores were not particularly strong. And at this point in my life, I had mellowed a fair amount. But the thought that went through my mind was, did you come across any students that have started conservative clubs on campus? But I knew if I asked that, the whole room would come down on me at that point. And I had no desire to get into having everybody angry at me because I asked that question. And so I'm just saying, have the same rules for students, have the same rules for faculty that you're going to have there across them. And don't have political bias go and determine who's going to be admitted or given tenure.
Well, you know, I agree with you on a lot of that. But if you don't like the college and their approach on things, there's lots of colleges in this country. You know,
if you look at surveys nationwide of faculty, so I mentioned one earlier with law professors. You know, you had like 93% of the law professors were registered as Democrats, 4% were registered as Republicans. So, you know, you may have like one law school like George Mason Law School, where you may have half the faculty maybe Republicans. But they're such an outlier. I mean, that if you have 93% overall are registered Democrats, only half at George Mason, you have a lot of universities where it's zero. And I just want faculty to kind of be less biased in terms of who they give tenure to. I think students learn more if they have a diversity of views of the faculty. If they have faculty that kind of argue and kind of trade points back and forth, I think the students learn more from that. I think also that when all the faculty agrees with each other, they become lazy in terms of teaching. What happens is that they don't worry that if they only provide one side of the argument, the student's going to go to another class and get the other side, and then they're going to see that they were biased because they know that all the other faculty at the university agrees with them. So, you know, it's if it was, you know, half the schools were like that and the other half were some, the opposite, I still wouldn't think that would be great. I'd rather have each faculty be diverse, but you just don't have that across universities these days.
All right, thank you for the call. Let's try to get one more call in real quickly. Skip, good morning, you're on. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Peter. I'll tell you something, Dr. Lott. That question that somebody asked about that initiative in Oregon. Just made me almost forget my question. That was so nuts. Meanwhile, that just proves to me that a few people know how to waste a whole lot of time and effort and money on something that ridiculous. So I wanted to ask you, as we're coming up, sir, and you're such a wonderful guru about these things, plus in your history, you personally had some time with government agencies and your knowledge of them. Do you think that there's some things that are, I'll put it like this, are we doing as good a job as we can being properly prepared security-wise for our upcoming 250th anniversary? Are there things that you can give us some cliff notes on? I can hear you chuckle, I understand. Is there some things that you could give us some cliff notes on to just have our antenna up for personally for ourselves, our families, our schools, and a little review? And thank you, sir, for coming on today. Thank you, Peter.
You bet. And so we're coming up against a break, so I'm going to have Dr. Lott hang on to that question and answer when we come back. Our phone lines are open at 406-721-1290. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday edition of Talk Back with Dr. John Lott. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday edition of Talk Back. And again, we're privileged to have with Dr. John Lott, a founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, here on the phone. And I know you wanted to real quickly deal with the last caller before we get another one on the line. Go ahead, please, Dr. Lott.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it from Skip. My own guess is that Montana is not going to be one of those states that one has to particularly worry about that type of issue. But the question that he raises fits in with kind of an earlier caller about the kind of the escalation of political violence that we have. And unfortunately, it's something that we probably are more concerned about now than, you know, in 1976 at the 200th anniversary, plus with what's going on with Iran right now. We saw in the first month afterwards, there was kind of obviously Iran-related violence in the United States, some terrorist attacks that occurred. The only thing I can say is, obviously, you know, if people see something strange, they should be willing to call the police. Fortunately, we have the FBI. It seems to be much more on the ball right now than it was a couple of years ago. So, it's going to be interesting times.
All right. We have Perry standing by from
It looks like we lost Perry, but okay. We do have Jim.
Jim from Billings. Jim, good morning, sir. You're on Talk Back with Dr. Lott. Go ahead.
Good morning. I appreciate letting me in here. I just wanted to comment on the two representations that you made about Bezos. He was being criticized for saying that the president was more disciplined in this term than his first term, which I share the opinion that he is not. And that's what he was criticizing before. As far as Tallarico goes, I've never heard him say anything even remotely violent. And the senator, whose name I can't remember, from Maine, was again just criticizing Bezos for his comments that Trump
was criticizing Bezos for getting his money through theft. And both Tallarico and
I watched the whole conversation live on TV. He criticized
right,
him.
Okay, well,
he was being criticized for calling the president more disciplined this time around.
Well, Plantner and Tallarico may have also criticized them for that, but they have continually criticized them. Plantner explicitly for getting his money. He didn't deserve to get the money that he got.
I pay attention to all that stuff, and I've never heard that. But he was.
Well, I'm happy to go and provide you quotes for that.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Sorry. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the call. Yeah. All right. So we have about, three?
Let John go ahead and respond to that.
Yeah, John, please go ahead and continue to answer that question. Thank you.
Right. You have direct quotes. It's, from Tallarico, where he's talking about the billionaires waging wars against the rest of us right now. The billionaires are winning, taking money from people, trickle down economics. He uses the words theft and stealing from people explicitly in the quote that I'm seeing right now in front of me. So, they rigged the economy against the working people there and take, don't properly pay them. That's how they're getting their wealth. So, who knows? But it's just, if it's much more than what comments he made about Trump. And I'm sure anything positive he said about Trump compared to previous presidents. But if you listen to Bezos, he said positive things about Obama. He said positive things about Biden, said that he had worked with all those presidents and that it was important for businessmen to work with the person who is in charge right now. The fact that he said anything positive about Trump, though, I'm sure set off more than a few people.
Well, Dr. Lott, we have just about less than a minute and a half left. Are you working on any new books or publications, sir?
Oh, yeah. Well, I need to work on another book. My wife has been telling me over and over again that I need to finally get around to writing my 11th book, but it takes a while to kind of get in the groove on that. As far as other work, I just finished a piece for Real Clear Investigations. We did a survey on the rate that people across the country were caring. It was basically a survey of general election people. And what you find is about 13% of general election voters carry all or most of the time. Wow. Another 6% at least carry sometimes. So you have 30% of Americans carry a gun at least once in a while.
Dr. Lott?
It's much higher in constitutional carry states. It's over 34% there. So anyway, that I have will be coming out soon.
We are completely out of time. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us, Dr. Lott. We look forward to our next visit. Okay, Mr. Nick, what's coming up on tomorrow's, on Friday's show, sir?
We'll do open phones again for the first hour, and then the second hour we'll be joined by David Sanders. He's running for the Montana PSC.
All right, there you go, and thanks for all your calls, everybody. Get out there and enjoy this beautiful day, and we'll see you tomorrow morning bright and early at 8 o'clock for another edition of Talkback. Have a great day, everyone.